Just a couple of more weeks in the Gospel according to Matthew. In more recent weeks, we've been considering the resurrection of Jesus and the meaning that that had for the people living in that day, and as well as the meaning it has for each one of us. Last week, we studied the resurrection of Jesus, the tomb being opened and all of that, and then the encounter that Jesus had with the two Marys. They had with him actually, and the message he gave to them to go and tell his brothers about his resurrection. And so they were proceeding to do that. In the meantime, there are other things going on. And that is where we're going to go this morning, beginning with verse 11. And while they were going, that is while Mary and Mary were going, behold, some of the guard came into the city and told the chief priest all that had come to pass, or all that had happened. Now, we can understand why Mary and Mary were headed now towards the disciples, because they had just wonderful, unimaginable, great, and majestic words to share with them that would be a source of unbelievable encouragement to those 11 guys that were sitting around, probably in the greatest grief and mourning they've ever experienced in their whole life, understanding that Jesus has died, and feeling guilty as all get out because not a single one of them stood with him, that they scattered like sheep when the blow was struck. Can you imagine how uplifted they were when they got the words? It seems as though some of the Roman soldiers who had been guarding Jesus had also left. Doesn't appear that all of them did, but some of them did, we're told. And they make their way back into the city. And one of the interesting things is they don't go to Pilate. They go to the chief priests, those who were probably most responsible for the arrest and the trial and the crucifixion of Jesus. Now, we can imagine that soldiers very typically tend to be sometimes prideful people, especially when they have the power of Rome behind them and all of that. So we can imagine that these Roman soldiers were very prideful people. And what they're doing here is this, is there's coming to report they have failed in their job. And they failed. The job they failed in was, in essence, to make sure that Jesus stayed in his tomb. Now, we understand this from what the Gospels tell us, and that is this, is they were there. They saw, they heard. In other words, they saw the angel descending from heaven like light. They saw as the tomb was opened, as the stone was rolled away. They felt the earthquake underneath their feet, and more than likely they heard the words of the angel to the two Marys. Can you imagine being one of them? I would imagine it was probably the most phenomenal thing that they had ever pictured and experienced in their whole lifetime. I don't know if you realize this or not, but when it comes to the Roman soldiers who were guarding things, that there were severe consequences that fell upon them if they failed in their job. The typical thing was they were taken out and they were executed. That's how serious they were about guarding things and guarding people and doing their job of guarding what they were sent to guard. The scenario would have been this. If Jesus had not risen from the dead, they would have hung around the tomb for several days, maybe a week. We can't imagine them doing it forever, that there would have come a point when they would have finally decided that there's no issue anymore, so it's okay for us to leave the tomb. Just to give you some ideas of how serious this whole thing was in regard to themselves. If we look at the book of Acts, chapter 16, verse 26, the context there is that Paul and Silas had been put in prison in Philippi. And they're sitting in jail at night, and they're not the only prisoners that are there. And there's a guard there that's supposed to be guarding them. And what happens in the middle of the night is there's an earthquake. And the prison house shook so terribly that the doors fell open and everyone's chains were unfastened. Amazing. Do you know what happened when the Philippian jailer woke up because of all this? What the scriptures tell us is this. As he awoke and he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself. He knew how serious something like that was going to be for him. Because he anticipated that all of those prisoners, because the doors were open and everything else, that they had fled. They were gone. He lost all of them. But now in the quiet, he hears, we're still here. We haven't gone anywhere. We know what happened to that jailer, don't we? Because of that, he came to faith in Jesus Christ. The amazing thing is this, is these men experience something even more spectacular. And we know that at least immediately, none of them came to faith in Jesus Christ. Maybe sometime later that happened. We don't know. We don't know the history of these men. And we're hopeful that that probably possibly took place, but we don't know that for certain. We also don't know exactly what they reported to the priests. Were they really truthful in everything that they saw? We really have no reason to believe that they weren't. This thing's poking way up in the air, isn't it? It's on backwards. Oh, it got bent. Okay. One thing we do know is this. Because they didn't say anything to the priests about the fact they were asleep for a reason. And that is because they were not. They were wide awake. They knew exactly what had taken place. They didn't see the resurrected Christ. But they know that when the tomb was opened, no Jesus. And when the priests, or when they, the priests, had gathered with the elders in the council, they gave much money to the soldiers. Just remember, these are the same chief priests and Pharisees and Sadducees now have been called, and the elders of the people have been called all together to the council, the same ones that had connived and plotted to have Jesus done in. They murder Jesus, and there is no remorse, as far as we know. Remember this, that there had been soldiers at the cross of Jesus. There was a centurion there, and that when he died, what did they conclude? And it doesn't say just he, it says they. That indeed this man was the very Son of God. Well, we know this. We know that because you would have to say that they're really deep in this at this point. These priests and all these other people are really, really deep in this whole conspiracy thing. And so they really got to keep it going. So they do what they think they need to do to make that happen. And what they do is they bribe the soldiers. Now, we know this bribery is often an effective tool when it comes to covering stuff up. Bribery, I would imagine, has gotten to be a bigger, bigger picture when it comes to all kinds of things in the United States and lots of places in the world. You may not realize it, that if you go to Honduras or Uganda places, bribery is just a way of life. If you want to get anything done by any government official, you have to bribe them to do it. Give them money. Michael and Cindy Erb still have not officially adopted Jessica, even though they're treating her as if she is their own daughter. And the whole reason is there's government holdup. Somebody's waiting for their palm to be greased. They didn't offer them just a little money, they offered them a lot of money. It was probably silver coins, just like they had paid Judas with. Those 30 pieces of silver. We know that it was a lot of money because these men were willing to take great risk to their own life by being a part of this whole charade. It's a measure of how willing people are to do just about anything. There's a saying that power corrupts. Well, we also know that bribery corrupts, or the offer of money corrupts people. Unfortunately, it's something that happens very often, I would imagine. These guys in this conspiracy, they have done absolutely everything they could conceive of to make sure everything went the way that they had predetermined. They did everything they could to make sure that Jesus stayed in the grave. These men knew that, and these men utterly failed in doing what they were supposed to do to start with. The amazing thing to me is this. You would expect these priests and these other people to be absolutely enraged because of the massive failure of these guards. Wouldn't you? I mean, the typical thing would be this. The boss would look at him and say, how could you mess this up so badly? After all, it wasn't just you. There was a number of you there. How could you mess up your job? Couldn't you have just done what we asked you, what we instructed you to do? It was very simple. Again, we don't know for certain what the soldiers told them, but I would imagine it had to something similar to at least to what the truth was. They didn't come with excuses. They didn't come saying, you know what, we all accidentally fell asleep. And we woke up and... They don't make excuses. We also know this, that these men that were supposed to be the most godly of Jewish society were probably the most corrupt in the whole country. They had a great love of money and they were all filthy rich. They used their position for their own gain. So they could afford to give them a lot of money. And it wouldn't even affect them at all. But what they do is they pay them money to do nothing other than lie. They say something they know is absolutely not true. They said to them, "You are to say that his disciples came in the dark and stole him while we were sleeping." In other words, lie about what you know is true. I mean, I realize it, but when Paul was in Rome, he was chained to a Roman guard. And that Roman guard's only job was to make sure that Paul didn't escape. There is something about this whole thing that seems as though common sense is just flat gone out the window. Do you feel like that's happened today some? Like every time I turn around, I'm thinking, gosh, where is even common sense today? Much less common courtesy and honesty and all that stuff. But there's something that really should smack everybody in the face that here's this cockamamie story coming from anybody. And that is this, is if you were sleeping, if you all fell asleep, let me get this straight. What they're going to go out and tell people is this. As we were guarding the tomb, we all fell asleep. Some of the disciples of Jesus, while we were sleeping, managed to get in, walked right past us. Open the tomb up, and you may understand that when you roll rock on rock, it makes noise. Go into the tomb, take the body of Jesus, take the wrappings off the body of Jesus, because they were left in the tomb, and then sneak out with him without any one of you being aroused. And oh, by the way, if you were all sleeping, how in the world do you know what happened to the body of Jesus? How can you say that his disciples came and stole his body because you don't know if you were asleep? Now, isn't that just common sense? Anybody with a brain should be able to see through this whole thing. Their willingness to go along with all of this under really the threat of their own death. Just a measure of how far people are willing to go to keep Jesus in the grave. And then they proceed. And if this comes upon the governor who hears it, we will persuade him and we will keep you out of trouble. See, they know that if Pilate finds out about this, these guys are going to be in deep weeds. So they got to do a little coaxing here. And these guys know it too. Now let me ask you, do you think they have any confidence they might be able to convince Pilate to be merciful? They seem to be pretty good at manipulating Pilate before, right? Because they brought Jesus before him under false pretenses and false charges. And repeatedly, Pilate said, I can find no guilt in this man. He's innocent as far as I'm concerned. But they still manipulated him to have Jesus crucified. These men seem to be willing to trust. These men who have shown themselves to be absolutely untrustworthy for the love of money. Just remember, these guards did not see Jesus raised, but they did see everything else. Just remember this, that the guards at the cross of Jesus had come to a totally different conclusion. And they experienced something very similar. Sometimes it amazes us at how close people can come to Christ and at the same time refuse to accept him and willfully turn away from him and walk in the other direction. I mean, rather than believe, they chose not to. Well, we know this. As they were described, as we read last week, that they experienced paralyzing fear. I mean, you would have thought of nothing else. Fear would have pushed them into the kingdom of God. But what I want to say this morning is we have to realize something. All of this is according to God's plan. Every detail. The sad thing is these men traded eternity for money. Should grieve our heart. And any time we see anyone else doing the same thing, it should wrench our very heart. They took the money and did as it had been instructed. And the story spread among the Jews from the day until today. And you can say the same thing today. That even today, this story continues to be circulated. And we've already shown the very fallacy in the whole thing. How do you know what happened to Jesus if you were asleep? But we can understand this, that in those days, that when the word got out that Jesus had resurrected from the dead, that it would have spread through Jerusalem like a raging fire. And most people would doubt it. I would imagine the very most majority of people would doubt the whole story, but it would spread like a story. It would have been front page material for the Jerusalem Times. And just remember, this was during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, so there was a lot of people in Jerusalem that were not normally there. They didn't have newspapers and things. How did things spread? By word of mouth. Now, some of you played this game before. I don't know what the name of it is, but we've done it before, and it's really kind of funny to do it. Sometime do it in your home fellowship or whatever, and you'll be surprised. And the way it goes is you sit in a circle, and one person whispers something to the next person sitting by him, who then whispers it to so on and so on and so on and so on. And when it gets all the way around the circle, the last person says what the secret was. Have you ever done it before? Have you ever noticed that the secret is never the same as it was in the very beginning? That it got messed up? That people have a way of hearing something and thinking that's what was said and maybe rearranging it a little bit to make more sense to them? We all have our own language, after all. So we tend to interpret things in that language and express those things in that language. We like to embellish things, too, now, don't we? In other words, maybe put a few adjectives in there to spice things up a little bit. The amazing thing is the message of the resurrection of Jesus is crystal clear. It's still as clear today as it was 2,000 years ago. Mankind has not messed it up, even though they've tried to. Over and over and over again. Let me just tell you an example of how Lori and I experienced something along these lines years ago. There was a man in the church. His name was Otto Ledson. He was in the original core group. It was really before we had that. The church had started forming and all that. But Deborah and Walter probably remember Otto and Jan and Lloyd and Lucy, but most of you probably wouldn't. But I get this message one morning, and it came through the prayer chain that Otto had been rushed to the hospital just at that time, and he'd had a massive heart attack and or brain aneurysm, and they didn't expect him to make it. So I get on the phone, I call the hospital. Otto is actually in intensive care, but Otto's been in the hospital for a whole week at that point. And he had heart trouble, had nothing to do with brain aneurysm. So what I just want to encourage all of you guys that are in part of the prayer chain, just make sure you get the message at least close to right. Because, I mean, it was so far off, it was really funny when we found out about it. I went to see him, he was fine. They were getting ready to discharge him. But people can really mess it up. But there's some things you just don't miss. When God's got his finger, and if you don't want it messed up, it does not get messed up as much as people try to mess it up, whether they do it intentionally or not. You see, everyone in Jerusalem knew about it. If you think about the story that we have in Luke chapter 24 of the two disciples, Cleopas and the other one that's unnamed, walking to Emmaus from Jerusalem, and they're talking with each other, and the resurrected Jesus starts walking along beside them, and they don't recognize who he is, but they're talking about the stuff that had transpired with Jesus through the week. And you understand, people all over Jerusalem were doing the same thing. It was the hot topic. But Jesus played ignorant. And what did Cleopas say to him? Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem? And what are these things which have happened here in these days? In other words, you'd have to have been a deaf person passing through Jerusalem and not know what was going on. Only someone with their head stuck in the sand would not have known. Sadly, even today, there are those, as we mentioned, who continue to espouse the same lie. You get on the internet, guys, and you can find people presenting the same thing over and over again. The two popular ones are this, is that the body of Jesus was stolen, and then the disciples just told everybody that it was resurrected. Now let me tell you something. Would you believe that if they just told you it had happened? Maybe some naive people would, but most people would say, I will believe that when I see it and I hear it myself. And they wouldn't believe it until they did. Not just because somebody said that Jesus resurrected from the dead. I mean, would you believe it if somebody rushed in here this morning and said, June Plett resurrected from the dead. She's walking down the street out there. Would you believe it? We know that one of these days she will, but we know that hasn't quite happened yet. The only way that lie would hold any water is if no one saw Jesus resurrected. The problem that they have is this, is there were not just one or two, there were bunches of people that Jesus appeared to. He spent 40 days on earth after his resurrection for a purpose, and the biggest purpose was to make people aware of the fact that he had really, truly, honestly, fully, completely resurrected from the dead. So that their testimony would be written down, because basically, guys, that's what the New Testament in this Bible is that the testimony of the apostles of the truth and the reality of Jesus, and one of the things they focus on more than anything else is the truth and reality of his resurrection. It is one of the most key elements of the gospel. If you take the resurrection away, guys, there is no gospel at all. There is no good news. There's nothing to tell anybody. How many people today continue to try to keep Jesus in the grave? There's a lot of talk going around about Islam these days. And one of the things I would say to you is we can't judge the behavior of all Muslims based upon what some do. It would be just as wrong for them people to judge Christians because Paul Hill or whatever his name was killed that abortion doctor in Pensacola years ago. Right? If you want to call him a doctor. But Islam is sadly lacking, guys. The funny thing about it is they have a very high regard for Jesus. They recognize Jesus as a prophet. But at the same time, they don't believe he was resurrected from the dead. So they have a religion of sorts. But it's only, they have a little bit of it. They don't have the whole thing. If you don't have the whole thing, might as well have nothing. One of the most amazing things that has ever happened in history is how rapidly Christianity spread through the Middle East, into Europe, into Africa, into Asia in just a matter of just a few years. There's been nothing like it ever to take place in the history of mankind. the message of the gospel going out into the world. And how many people do you reckon were believing then who never saw Jesus resurrected from the dead? But they did see very often people face to face who did see Jesus resurrected from the dead. And we know this. We know that Peter was crucified upside down in Rome right about the same time that Paul was beheaded. Both of those men could have easily saved their own life by doing one thing, and that was denying the resurrection of Jesus. Now, I don't know about you, but if that had been me, unless I was absolutely, totally convinced of it, I probably would have given up the ghost. But the fact that they didn't screams to us and screams to everyone, this is real. This really happened. This man truly is the Son of God, and he's the resurrected, risen Son of God. And he's the only way to God. We have the same message to an unbelieving world out there. And it desperately needs to hear it. And sometimes when we do, we may be spit on. But we don't do it. We don't stop doing it for that reason. We do it because we believe there is always hope that this person will believe it. We're going to talk about the Great Commission next week. Go and make disciples of all nations. The question is, are we serious about doing that very thing? Think about the people that had something to do with your conversion. I guarantee you, I don't think there's a single person in here that came to faith in Jesus Christ just because they were walking down the street one day and somebody lost a Bible and they picked it up and started reading it. Now, that happens sometimes, don't get me wrong. But it's very rare. More often than not, God always, without exception, uses his word. But how does he convey it to people? Very often through people like us. I'm here today because God saved me. But I'm here today because people thought enough of me and they loved me enough to tell me the truth. Sometimes it's not easy. But we're all about truth, and truth is what people need. So be ready for next Sunday. We'll be wrapping up Matthew with a big bang, I think.